park just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Hey, that would be me, and good evening to you, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Indian summer. What a nice time to be in Maine, eh?
Oh, huh? You bet. It's just beautiful
wow.
Today.
Spectacular sunsets, yes. No bugs. It's great.
Don't
we love September in Maine?
That's big, no bugs.
No bugs. Hey, I spent the weekend up at the deer camp with the boys, repairing the chimneys, you know, scraping paint, doing all the work that has to be done.
Good for you.
And it was just, what a great time to be in the woods.
Oh, it was just marvelous. As you said, no bugs, and it's great temperatures right now.
Yeah.
Leaves are turning, and, you know, no high winds, no heavy rains. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. And by the way, speaking of that, I wanted to say hi to the elder statesmen of the south end of Sebois Lake up there. Ron and Paul are up there for the week, friends of mine.
Yes.
And I wanted to say hi to them and wish them spectacular sunsets, some pork chops on the grill, and great fishing.
You had steak, too, I understand.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic.
Of course.
Yeah, and blackberry pie, homemade blackberry pie.
Oh, man, that's big.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's big.
We ate well.
And you played cribbage.
Oh, yeah, a little bit
Who
of that.
Who was the tournament winner?
I can't tell you that.
Can't tell you that.
It wasn't me. I can tell you that. Anyway, we digress. We want to welcome you again.
I'll tell you who it was.
Who was it?
Your son. Your son.
Yeah, he's better cribbage player than I am. Anyway, we welcome you to the Maine Outdoors. We have an interesting guest tonight who was with us last spring, and he provoked a lot of great phone calls, and we know he will again tonight. Introduce him in just a second, but first, the gang that make the show possible every week, our engineers there in the studio. Jim Layton, the man from Orrington Pond.
Well,
I mean Fields Pond.
Fields Pond. Fields Pond, America, Paul.
Fields Pond, America.
Yes.
Take a bow.
Isn't this a wonderful summer day?
It is.
But you know, we did have a lot of bugs down here on Fields Pond.
Did you?
A lot of mosquitoes.
Well, did you really?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll be darned.
They sure were.
Well, they weren't too bad up where I was. It was nice.
But you know, the folks, you pull up a chair, we're going to have a great show tonight. Get ready to do a little scratching.
That's right. And to the right of Norm, that's right, we're going to talk about ticks tonight.
Yes.
To the right of Jim is Norm Plord, the sage of Grand Lake Stream.
Good evening. I agree. Nice weather this weekend.
Oh.
And that blackberry pie, my wife made a peach pie, so a tough choice.
Peach pies are good, too.
Really good.
Peach pie.
I think I would reach for the blackberry first. But I like peach. And with him is the other fellow, the Baron of the raspberry patch over there in Orrington, Mr. Scotty Bates.
Yes, and nothing beats a raspberry pie.
You're right. Well, raspberry pie is good, too. And Scotty has a guest tonight. We're going to introduce him in just a second. His name is Ken Bustard, and he's here from the Shriners. He's going to talk a little bit about an auction. But we'll get to that during the digest. And, of course, my co-host, who's a registered master Maine guide, he's written a lot of great fishing books. He's a big trout man, and he's a good guy, Bob Lehman.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Do you know what today is, really?
Oh, tomorrow is the first day of fall.
You're correct there. So what is today?
Today would be the something equinox.
The vernal equinox.
Well, yeah, the vernal, that old vernal equinox, sure. Yeah.
So the end of, that marks the end of summer.
I know.
That's
but
I
like
day.
The fall. It's a
I
fun
do.
Time
I
for
do.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our guest tonight is, he's been with us, as I said, earlier this spring. He is a coordinator of the Diagnostics Research Tick Lab at the University of Maine, which is part of the UMO Co-op Extension Group. And he's Professor Jim Dill. Jim.
Yes. Well, thank you. Great to be here again.
Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you. Love to talk ticks.
And you are going to be talking ticks. And if it's anything like the last time, we're going to get a lot of phone calls tonight. So you want to turn up his
turn
mic?
Jimmy
is
up.
It okay?
All right.
I'm going to turn Jimmy up just a little bit. Okay, anyway, he's going to be our guest tonight, and he knows a lot about ticks, and he's got some interesting things to share with us, and we'll be talking to him in just a moment. Right now, though, it is time for Outdoor Digest, and remember, we have a number, a toll-free number that you can dial, And what is that number, Bob?
The number is 1-800-966-1039, and you have to dial the whole number, as you know.
Yes, sir,
even if you're local.
And we'd love to have you join our program tonight, so jot that number down. Remember, if you're calling us tonight, be sure to turn your radio down, because you'll get a bad echo, and it'll be very disconcerting. Right, Jim?
Sure. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Okay. Turn your radio down if you do call in. Let's see. A couple of program notes. Next week, Bob's going to be off playing hooky down the Grand Lake Stream. Yours truly will be here, and our guest next week is going to be Susanna Hamilton, who's the blood tracker lady. She'll be with us to talk about tracking wounded deer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I know her. Yeah. Yeah, they were on last year, weren't they?
Yeah, they got those cute little dachshund pups.
Oh, they do, yeah.
Anyway, she'll be with us. You'll be at the stream.
Is it next week? I'll be leaving on the 27th of the month. So I think that's going to be...
That's next week.
That's next Friday I'll be leaving.
Yeah, you better get your worms warmed up.
Yeah, I got to get my worms and live baits.
That's right.
Get your live baits. Okay, a couple other...
I'll use those down at the stream.
There you go.
A couple of other things here. Turkey season is open right now, and there's been a really big change. It hasn't been talked up too much. But in a number of turkey wildlife management districts, you can actually bag 5 birds this fall.
Wow.
Did you guys
there
know that?
There you go. Yes.
Not 1 or 2, but 5.
That's right.
That's
which would indicate that maybe they think there are a few too many turkeys, right?
Yeah. And now that's in all zones? Or
no,
just...
that's in zones 15 through 17 and 20 through 25, which is really over in western Maine mostly.
Yeah. It leaves everything but my zone, 26.
Yeah. I think in your zone, I think you can take 3 birds in your zone.
Yeah.
Anyway, turkey season is on, and tomorrow morning, a half hour before sunrise, guess what's happening, Norm? You don't know, Norm?
Half hour before sunrise?
Half hour before sunrise tomorrow morning in the woods. What's happening?
Moose season.
Moose season.
Yes.
Very good. Yeah, moose season. Right. And moose season opens, and we welcome moose hunters to the state of Maine, and we understand it's going to be a warm week, so remember the moose biologist encourages you, and for some reason he says Maine people are very reluctant to do this, but it pays to quarter up those big animals, get the hide off them fast, because they've had a lot of spoilage during these warm weather moose hunts. So.
Did you see on the Bangor Daily on computer, they have a video of how to quarter a moose and dress it.
I saw that, yeah.
That is excellent.
Yeah, I looked at that. That was very well done.
I get that guy to go with me.
Yeah. I was talking to Lee Cantor. My wife Diane has a cow permit for up north, and I've gutted a few animals in my time, but they want you to bring in the ovaries. It's from a cow because they get an enormous amount of research information. And I told Lee, you know, I know how to dress an animal out, but I don't know if I could find the ovaries. And so he said, check out the video, which I did, and it was very helpful.
Wow.
So anyway, we'll see what happens. Okay, what else? I think it's almost time to bring in the band.
Get ready, Bobby.
I'm ready.
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are my
reasons. Boy, you love that, don't you?
Yeah.
Remember when we started? Remember way back? Hey, remember?
That was right on cue, wasn't it?
It was.
You guys remember when we first started playing? Bob's not big on bass. He's a trout man.
We
started playing that song. Remember last, I don't know when it was, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And he didn't like it?
That's right.
Now he's digging it.
I guess maybe.
Grooving.
He's grooving, baby. Yeah. He's grooving.
What's going on in the fishing world?
I'd catch a bass once in a while. I don't want it. Especially if something else isn't biting, you know, and other things, you know.
Yeah, but you're a trout
man. I'd prefer trout, you know, and salmon. But
trash fish, aren't they?
Yeah, I'll take a bass if, you know, if that's all there is.
What's going on in the
fishing
world?
Well, already. Well, at Costa Grand Lake Stream, I'm heading down to Grand Lake Stream, I guess. And I'm looking forward to it. And the water temperature right now is somewhere around 65. It's come up a little. Well, we've had some warm weather here.
It's gone down. It was 65.6 yesterday. It's gone down a half.
Then it was down to 63.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, but it's gone back up a little bit. So, but it'll get down. We'll get some cold weather. The salmon must be coming in. No, there's a lot of water, plenty of water running.
Good,
I think somebody said 280 feet per second. So somebody else said 500, but I don't know about that because we had a lot of water, you know, that hurricane that went by down east.
Yeah.
And they picked up a lot of water. The brooks are running good, have been running good, you know, right through July and August. There's plenty of water this year. I mean, the last couple of years we've had this drought. And, of course, brooks and streams suffered a lot for brook trout. But right now, this year, they've are coming back.
Good.
And, of course, in September, there's only one fish limit on trout. But they're a lot of fun to catch. Just the same, you can release all you catch and keep just one. And I was going to ask you, Paul, are you still taking dips down at Branch Lake? Morning dips?
Morning dips?
Is it cold?
Are you kidding me?
No, 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 I'm not. You're not. No, you don't do that anymore.
No, that was 40 years ago. Are you kidding me? No.
Well, my friend Mark Fowler took a dip at Toddy Pond there twice yesterday.
Did he, yeah?
Yeah, I was down. Norm and I were down there for a couple of days.
Intentionally?
To a visiting friend, and a lot of other guys were down there, and we had a lot of fun. We ate really good, too.
Yeah.
We did a little fishing, but not much. And it was fun. So, but lake temperatures, I was going to say, some of the guys took a dip in the water, and they came in, they were shaking around, man.
I was
telling
you,
that water's cold.
Yeah, it's the nights are cooling, no question.
Yeah, and the bass have apparently gone deep, because we didn't catch any bass.
Yeah.
We tried, but nothing doing. And I was going to say that the thermocline in some of these lakes is down about 30 to 40 feet. So that's what they still got to do right now to get down and get a salmon or a togue and get below that. Now, you mentioned there's some deep holes in some of these lakes, and you also mentioned that there's a really deep hole in Green Lake.
Well, yeah, we were talking about the deepest lakes in Maine, and the Google tells you it's Sebago at 306 feet.
Yeah.
But Mark Kane, one of our fellow skulkers there, has an application on his phone which says that there's a deep hole on Green Lake. It's 325 feet.
And I don't believe that.
I said, I don't believe that. And he
me. Green Lake's in Ellsworth, by the way.
Yeah, it's a Green Lake in Ellsworth. Yeah. Says it's 325 feet. There's a hole there. It's about 70 by 100 feet wide. You can see it. It's on the topography of this app. And I said, I don't know. I don't believe that. But we're going to check it. We're going to run it by Greg Burr and find out.
That's interesting, though.
Yeah.
A lot of these lakes have really deep water. And when they, there's a map that you can get on lakes and ponds that gives you the depths.
Yeah, I have a book.
I looked that up because I have never seen anything like that.
I'll tell you, Paul, I fish Green Lake, and I have a fish finder that goes down to 240 feet, and it went off the chart in one spot down there.
Well, you must have been over that hole.
I must have been.
We're going to call that the Kane Hole from now on.
Yes. I guess maybe.
All right. Is that about it?
That's it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Now, you're welcome.
Excellent report.
One more item.
Okay. We're going to have Ken Bustard is Scotty's guest, and we're going to give him a little airtime to promote an auction. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I appreciate it. Saturday, September 28th, we're going to have an incredible auction out to the Anna Shrine Temple. This is for the Ralph J. Pollard Masonic Lodge in Orrington, and also it's being co-planned by the Band of Brothers, which is a chapter of the Widow's Sons Motorcycle Association under the Masons. So of particular interest to sportsmen out there, we're going to have we've been gathering stuff all summer. We have a great fly fishing package. It's going to have an L.L. Bean rod, a net, float tube, some handmade Maine flies. Got a lot of camping equipment. Today I went out to an estate and picked up an incredible amount of tools. So if you're working on your camp, you need tools. We got a great little wood stove. We got a couple of snow blowers, doors and windows, everything from office furniture, office supplies, and then this kind of stuff that would be more of interest to the sportsman. So it's
What's the date again?
This Saturday coming up, September 28th, 11 to 2. You come out to the Anna Shrine Temple, rain or shine, and you can register and look the stuff over. And then 2 to 5, yours truly will be the auctioneer, and we'll be having a fast and furious country auction for sure.
That's on Outer Broadway,
right in Outer Broadway. Yeah.
Ken, are you a so-called professional auctioneer? I mean, have you done a lot of that?
Well, I've done charity auctions for several years now, but this summer I went to the Missouri School of Auctioneering just to take it up a notch, and so this will be my first big auction since graduating from the auction school.
I love to listen to auctioneers.
It's fun.
Next to yodeling. I like yodeling.
Next to yodeling. Oh, it's a lot better than yodeling.
Norm does a powerful yodel.
You don't make any money yodeling.
Yeah. Can you give us just a quick little
sample? Yeah, there you go. Great.
Quick little sample. Auction Normoff. right now?
Auction, Norm, where do you think I ought to start? Can I get an open bid on Norm? How about $100 bid? Can I get $100 bid now, $20? Can I get $120?
$50.
$50. $50. He's got to be worth more than that.
$10.
Well, I told him we were looking for a good guy. We could a good-looking guy. We could auction a night off with a lady in the neighborhood and take her to dinner and so forth and have a great time. But he said he didn't think he qualified, but.
Oh, his wife said that, too.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Boy, aren't we hard on Norm? Yeah. Look, thanks a lot, Ken. That's great. Yeah. And we encourage people to turn out for the auction this Saturday at the Shriners facility. That's on Outer Broadway, right?
Right in Outer Broadway. Yeah. You can't miss it. The big Anna Shrine Temple out there, and rain or shine, because everything's going to be inside. Yeah. So.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Okay. Our guest again, if you just joined us, is Professor Jim Dill from the University of Maine. Nobody knows ticks like he does, and we know that ticks have become a real concern in the state of Maine as well as anywhere in New England, and we're going to be talking to him and fielding any questions that you may have, and we welcome your calls at 1-800-966-1039. Right now, though, it's time for the outdoor trivia question, and Bob Lehman has agreed to part with one of his highly popular streamer flies. I didn't check with you before the show.
Certainly do.
I'm glad you said
no
yes.
Problem.
Anyway, and Jim Dill has the question. What's the question, sir?
Sure. What do you call the trail used to transport canoes between two bodies of water?
All right. You ponder that, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our guest tonight, Jim Dill, is waiting for you to tell him what you call a trail that you use to transport canoes between two bodies of water.
As a Frenchman would say, la potage.
La potage.
La potage.
That is
right, Jim?
That is correct.
Okay, congratulations. Très bon.
Que ça va?
Oh, il est pari quoi. So how did you know that?
I'm just old. I'm like you, Paul. I'm 78, and I've been hunting and fishing for 60 years.
All right. Good for you.
Yep.
Is this Frank?
It's Frank from Sangerville, yes.
Yeah, what gets you such a late start, Frank, on hunting and fishing?
Is this Jimmy?
Yes, it is.
Where you been? I've been off the network for a while because I got four grown kids who have problems because they ain't adults like us, so I haven't been listening too often, but...
Well, Frank.
I understand you was yes.
Frank, you're almost as old as I am.
Well, how old are you, Paul?
I can't tell you that.
I could tell you, but I won't.
I'm 78.
All right.
Ex-Navy.
Well, congratulations. You're still active. You still get out in the woods.
I work 5 days a week, and I hunt and fish, and I cut my own wood.
Good for you, Frank. More power to you. That's great.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Instead of Jimmy's fly, which I have 10 of, could I get a sporting journal?
You want a sporting journal?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've
got a bunch of Jimmy's fly. Well, gee willikers. We normally don't only give those away during the first week of the first of the month.
Well, I'm going to dick away. You can give me half of the editions then.
All right,
I will have that.
Hey, I'm feeling generous tonight. I'm going to make sure you get a subscription, okay, Frank?
I appreciate that, Paul.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bob, you're not hurt, are you?
No, not at all.
Bob, no problem.
Bob, I'll tell you the truth. I've got five of yours and some of the books from you and Paul I won over the years on the radio, and I've got them framed. I didn't even use them.
Well, aren't you nice? Thank you so much.
Okay. You've got it, Frank. You're
thank you very much.
Persuasive guy, you silver-tongued W.
How could you say no?
All right. I can't say no. Stay on the line, Frank, and Norm's going to get your
thank
address,
you very much.
And we'll make sure you get signed up for a subscription to the Northwood Journal, all right?
Thanks very much. I really appreciate that. Something I look for. I don't have a television or a computer, so I look forward to reading it.
Okay. I hope you enjoy it, Frank, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too, Paul.
Thank you.
Take care, Frank.
All right. That was the correct answer. It's called La Potage.
Yeah.
And it's a place where you transport your canoe. All right. Let's get down to business. Again, Jim, thank you for coming. We appreciate
hey, no
you
problem.
Being
love
here.
It.
And for those who may not have heard our opening gambit, you are the coordinator of the Diagnostics and Research Center. And that's also the Tick Lab at the University of Maine. And you were on the show last spring, and we had a pretty good response. People are I think, concerned, and there's a lot of misinformation going around about ticks, and we know that you're the guy to talk to. So we're so pleased to have you here. And again, we welcome your calls. If you have a tick question you want to put to Jim Dill, you're welcome to do so here on the show. And what's the number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039. And you got to dial the whole number, even if you're local.
Okay, Jim. Okay, thank you. Jim, explain to our listeners, would you, just what is this Diagnostics and Research Tick Lab, and how's it going?
Yeah, oh, it's great. We just opened up this past year. Actually, we started taking ticks in on April 1st. And so far, as of September 1st, we had about 1,850 ticks submitted to the lab.
Wow.
And of those, there were about 1,150 of those were deer ticks. And those were tested for various diseases, Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and babesiosis. And it's been pretty interesting. Across those ticks, about 37% had Lyme in it, 8% had anaplasma, and 6% had babesia. And of all the ticks that we tested, about 42.5% had at least one of those organisms in it. And finally, there was about 7.5% that had a co-infection, meaning that they had more than one of those diseases in them. Could have been two, could have been three. But so, you know, those are pretty staggering numbers when you think about it. And So
before you opened this lab, there was obviously was a demand. The only way you could test a tick in the past was to send it away, right?
Right. You could send it to the University of Massachusetts, which was the closest place. There were other places around the country that does it also. Okay. And we charge $15.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Jim Dill. You stay with us right here on Maine Outdoors.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our guest is tick expert Professor Jim Dill from the University of Maine. We have a caller standing by who may have a question for you, Jim.
Great.
Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Hello. Are you talking to me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Is it somewhat of an echo or whatever? And I got my radio turned down. But anyways, is there a safe way to eradicate these ticks so my children can play around my 5 acres plus without hurting animals?
Yeah, that's a really difficult question because to... ticks are such that you're probably not going to eradicate them, number one. And number two, on acreage that large, if you're trying to actually come in and spray, that's an awful lot of acreage to try to spray with a chemical means. There's not a good, right at the moment, biological control agent. They're looking at a lot of different things. They're looking at some nematodes. They're looking at fungus. They're looking at some other herbs and that type of thing. But actually, the best material to use is bifenthrin is what it's called. And it's very closely related to permethrin, which you've probably all seen is one of the best tick repellents that's out there that you spray on your clothing. And bifenthrin, as I say, is very closely related to that. And what you want to do is you don't need to spray all 5 acres. You just want to spray the perimeter. Because especially the deer tick, which is the one you're concerned about, they like that interface of woods and grass. So you don't have to go out and spray the middle of your lawn or anything like that. You just want to spray the perimeter of your property. And you can buy the material, or you can have someone else come in and do it commercially. But as I say, it does get expensive, so it's very difficult to eradicate ticks.
And what is the name of the spray again?
It's called bifenthrin.
Bifenthrin.
Yep.
Okay, do you buy that?
You can buy it at any of the hardware stores, the big box stores. Just go in and just say you want something for tick control, and that's the material that you want. And it comes as a granule or as a liquid. I recommend the liquid formulation hopefully a sprayer, if you have a sprayer that's got some power behind it, because you want to mix up those leaves and that type of thing. Yeah. Along
I
the
bought
edge.
Some of that other stuff. I can't pronounce it, but I bought it at Walmart.
Spray on your clothing?
My hunting clothes,
yeah. Yeah, permethrin.
Permethrin
is what it's called, yep.
Yep.
And it's the best tick repellent we have, but that only goes on your clothing. You don't want to put it on your skin.
Right.
Right.
Don't rub it behind your ears.
No.
Perfume, no. Yeah. Are you still there, caller?
I'm still here.
Any other questions, sir?
No, I think you covered it. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck with your tick control. And we have another caller stacked up, I believe, don't we, Jim? Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill.
Hi, Jim. Brian calling from Machiasport.
How you doing?
Good, good. Question, you've probably heard Eastport has a big fire ant problem. Probably came in on the ships a few years ago.
Yep.
And now they have no ticks, zero ticks.
Right.
My question is, do the fire ants eat the ticks?
Well, there's two things going on there. As we've been looking at ticks in the state of Maine, down east in Aroostook County does not have a huge tick population at the moment. That's kind of one issue. The other issue is the European red ant or European fire ant, as you just mentioned. They are a very, very aggressive type of an insect, and they do control anything that's within the boundaries of where they forage. So would they kill a tick? My guess is, yeah, they could very well. You know, several of them would attack a tick because these, especially deer ticks, aren't very large. And I would guess that, that these fire ants would probably kill them and consume them.
Huh. So what about the fire ant? I mean, they hurt if you get bitten by them,
they,
right?
They do. They bite and they sting.
Mm-hmm.
And with the European red ant, their colonies can be several acres.
Is that right?
Yes. They can spread underground over several acres. They're very, very nasty critters.
Yeah, you have to burn them out?
No, you have to. You can't burn them. You use baits is one of the best things to get rid of them. There's a colony, a couple of them right here in Orono.
Wow.
So it has spread around, but you're absolutely right, the gentleman that said, Eastport and some of the coastal communities, they think they came in, especially on plant material, they thought that they came in on from Europe.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, does that answer your call, caller? Your question, caller?
It did. I just wanted to put in another plug. Fish and Wildlife now has, if you go to their main website and then click on the link, they have an active site showing how many moose, deer, bear, and turkeys are killed in each wildlife management district, and it's constantly updating to keep track of the...
Yep.
My concern right now is the bear kill, and it looks like it's going to be way down due to the natural forage this year and slow on baits there. Still under 2,000 killed, and the bait season's over, so
yeah,
it's probably going to be way down as a result. But it's a pretty neat link. You just click, and you can see in real time.
Yeah, that's quite a quantum leap from what IFW used to do in getting harvest numbers out. It used to take them six years to get the numbers, and now they're doing it like next day.
Yep.
And so this is probably going to revolutionize, critter management, I would think. Wouldn't you, Norm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Better handle for the commissioner on the seasons, whether they have to cut it off or not. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good data.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, we welcome your calls. What's the number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039.
Yeah, Jim, you mentioned during the break there that you're talking about that you have, in Maine, there are at least 13 or 14 different types of ticks.
Yep. There are somewhere between 13 and 15 species, and the reason why we kind of hedge on the number, there's probably a good 12 that are well-established, the ticks that you all know, dog tick, deer tick, and very close related to the deer tick is a woodchuck tick. There's a rabbit tick. Looks very, very similar to them. So that's why one of the things we always recommend is you have a tick, let's get it identified at least. And then,
all carry disease?
No.
They don't.
No, they don't all carry disease. The woodchuck tick has been associated with Powassan virus,
mm-hmm.
and that's a real nasty one because that only takes a very short period of time of feeding before the virus can be transmitted. And that lady that died in 2013, that's what she died of here in the state of Maine, was Powassan.
A woodchuck tick.
It actually was a deer tick that transmitted it to her, but it's commonly associated with woodchuck ticks as well as deer ticks.
Wow.
So.
Okay, we have another caller standing by. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Right here.
Yeah, go ahead, caller.
Yeah, University of Rhode Island did a thing on ticks, and they say that Lyme disease comes from the white-footed field mouse, and that what they did is they put feeding stations out in an area, and before they did, they dragged white towels through there, and they got loaded with ticks. And so they put these feeding stations out there for the white-footed field mice, and they would go through into the station to eat, and they would get dabbed by a wick of some tick killer.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these mice went out and they eradicated all the ticks in that field. They were running back and forth the next year, and there wasn't one tick to be found on them.
Right. One of the things that they do is actually they have materials out there called tick tubes. And in the tick tubes, you can do kind of do the same thing. They put cotton in there, and the cotton is treated with an insecticide. And the mice take the cotton, take it back to their nest, and it basically gets rid of the ticks right in their nest. So it, you know, all the mice that go into that nest are treated. And so the problem becomes is that, yes, white-footed mouse is associated with it, but so are there all the other small rodents, you know, chipmunks, squirrels, red squirrels. So even though you can treat one group like this, you still have plenty of other, unfortunately, small rodents running around that can also, you know, transmit ticks and that type of thing. So it's just one more thing that certainly helps, you know, in a situation. Yep.
Are any? Go ahead, caller. I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Do ermine get those ticks on them, and are they also a source of the Lyme disease?
Well, ermine. Well, the way it works is that when the ticks are born, they do not have Lyme disease in them. They actually pick it up from the rodents. The larval ticks feed on the rodents. They pick up Lyme disease and the other diseases from the rodents that they feed on, and then eventually transmit it to humans if they get on a human. As far as ermine being, you know, yes, they get ticks on them just like everything else does. Are they a big source of the tick population? Probably not. It's more the smaller rodents that seem to be, you know, of course, you just sheer numbers is what you're looking at with the rodents, so versus ermines in an area, because they're going to be eating the rodents anyway. So, but
yeah, that's true too.
Yep.
All right.
One more thing.
Sure.
Now, Paul, you were saying that people are having trouble with echo on telephones.
Yeah, usually caused by radios being on because we have a delay system here at the station.
Right. Well, many years ago, I was on a show called America's Funniest People, and I won. And I do this thing with my voice that makes an echo if you'd like to hear it.
Sure, lay it on us.
Okay, here we go. I have your attention, please.
Okay. Oh, boy, you are a talented guy.
Yeah,
all right, we appreciate the call. All right, good luck.
Have fun.
Thank you very much. All right, boy. Everybody's got a sense of humor today. That's great.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, we have another caller.
Love it.
Yeah, we have another caller?
Yes,
okay,
we do.
Okay, good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill. Go ahead.
Is that me?
That's you, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that other guy was pretty cool. He reminded me of those old Rodan Godzilla back in the day. That was pretty cool. My question is rather non-sequitur. I'm not talking about ticks or anything like that. I had a pretty straightforward question to you just because I can't get a straight answer. It's got nothing to do with the ticks or the rodents. Hey, coyotes, when can you take them? And if they pose a threat to your livestock, this is not posed directly to your guest, but I'm just saying I need a straight answer because everybody's telling me different things. Some people just say, shoot them, or you're going to call the game warden. If they pose a direct threat to your livestock and they engage at like 2 a.m, are you good to go out there? And
yeah, you can. It's legal to hunt coyotes. So I don't think that's an issue.
I don't have a license. I don't hunt. But I have livestock. Well,
okay, that's a little bit of a gray area. You might want to just check with your local game warden. You can call the Maine State Police anytime, day or night, and they'll give you the number and name of your local game warden. Just ask that person.
Yeah, I think anytime you're losing livestock.
If you're losing livestock,
you could take them.
Yeah, I think you got a pretty good case. Yeah,
you sure do.
Yeah.
I was just saying, it's happened a couple of times. Well, they've come close, and I haven't called a warden. But, hey, you're on Sunday night every night, so I figured I'd give you guys a call.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just so call the game warden. He'll straighten me out on that.
Okay, but if you get in trouble, don't blame it on us, all right?
No, I won't. No. I'm just saying. I was trying to avoid that.
Yeah, because, I think you're in the clear. You're in the clear. Actually, Jim Dill, what do you think about that? Jim is on the IFNW Legislative Committee. What do you think about that?
I believe he's in the clear for protecting livestock.
Yeah, I do, too.
If they're actually going after
the
livestock.
They only come around. They come around in cycles, but you never know.
That's right.
And when they come, it's like, you know, bam, you get hit. But, I mean, if I can preemptive, I'm not trying to say preemptive by going out and killing them, but, I mean, if you can sit there and, you know, assume a defensive posture and take care of these things. You know what I mean, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, certainly if it's actually attacking the livestock when you're there, you could definitely, in that case,
They're right out the back window.
Right.
So
right.
if I fire a shot.
Yeah. Well, then if you're just scaring them away, you know, that's a different story anyway. Yeah. So.
Unless you hit them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, good luck to you. Shoot straight. Okay, thank you for appreciating
the show, by the way.
All right, thank you, sir. Do we have any other callers stacked up?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay, let's take one more call, then we'll give Bob a chance to make a buck with his commercial. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Jim. My name is Frank. I just got out of work, and I was listening to this wonderful show on the radio on the way home, and I had a question, and we have a little hobby farm. And we raised guinea hens because we heard that guinea hens will eat ticks. I don't know how true that was.
It's true.
It's true from the standpoint of they don't search them out. They're foraging for anything they can find, any type of insect, any type of arthropod, seeds, and that type of thing. So from that angle, yes, they will eat ticks just like turkeys will, just like chickens will. Are they a good control measure? Research-wise, I haven't seen anything where that, you know, they're a definitive control. But it never hurts to have them. It never hurts to have the chickens around or whatever. But you just got to think that, you know, who's going to get who first? Because, you know, a tick will get on a bird too. So, you know, but birds are good at preening and cleaning themselves. So if they get a tick on them, they're probably going to eat it unless it's like behind their head or someplace where they can't get to very well. So will they eat some ticks? They absolutely will. But is it a good control measure? Some people say it is. Other people say it isn't. So,
yeah, we were raising guinea hens specifically for tick control. But we have chickens and everything, too, if they're no different. Because they're awfully noisy, as you know.
Yes.
And But we were raising them specifically for that. But
for the ticks.
Than a turkey or a chicken.
And what have you seen?
It's truly subjective or maybe wishful thinking. I know when I walk through our fields, it's a little less, but maybe it's just, again, wishful thinking.
Right. And ticks are seasonal, so you got to think about that, too. So.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Take one of those guinea hens and put it in a crock pot for me, would you?
Oh, they're good. Oh, okay.
All right.
Great.
All right. Take
thank
care.
You.
Appreciate the call.
Night.
Good evening. All right. Another caller stacked up?
We do have one, but he's working on it.
He's working on it.
Yeah,
all right, let's
do a commercial.
This would be a good time to take a break.
Yeah,
Bob Lehman has a message that he'd like to remind you about one of our sponsors.
We certainly do, and that's General Appliance and Brewer, and that's the place to go for your camp appliance needs, whether they are gas lights, gas refrigerators, gas ranges, gas freezers, or top of the line
compost toilets.
Thank
you. Ride the wave.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. And, Paul, you asked me the other night, a couple nights ago, about compost toilets, and you said, where do they get the power? Do you have to plug them in or what? And you know what the answer to that is?
You don't have to plug them in, right?
No, you don't, and all they need is a handful of peat moss and wood fiber.
I thought everything today you had to
that?
Plug in. I couldn't
I know
that,
it. Yeah. As I said, a handful of peat moss and wood fiber, and that's included in the sale, and all you have to do is get a handful or two of that and throw it in there, and every once in a while you clean it out, and that's it.
Wow.
Now, they do have to be vented, however, so what we would like to have folks drop in and check them out. They're beautiful little things, that they work wonderful, and they're not that expensive. So
General
we
Appliance
recommend you
Brewer.
Go over and General Appliance and Brewer and check them out. And also, while you're there, check our book displays over
yes,
there.
Yes, sir.
General
Your
books and my books.
And we patronize them and urge you to do as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have another caller standing by with a question. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Hey, guys. How you doing? It's Kevin. Good to talk to you guys. Just tuning in late.
Hey, Kevin, voice from the past. How you doing?
Voice from the past, yes. I want to come back and visit sometime.
Well, you should. You're welcome anytime.
Oh, thanks, Paul. Hey, tick comment that you might be able to respond to.
Sure.
I've had ticks all over my body my whole life as a taxidermist and an outdoorsman, and I've seen them on every critter except for a porcupine and a black bear. Why would that be? Okay. Have a good night, guys. Okay, I'll be Kevin. Listening for the answer.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Yeah.
Hey, thanks. We'll see you.
Yeah. Certainly with porcupines, my guess is just the with the quills and that type of thing, the ticks probably don't latch on, because what ticks do is they have a mechanism we call questing, and they get out on the end of a stick or a blade of grass or something, and they wave their front two legs around and they grab onto something soft and fuzzy. So my guess is, as a porcupine goes by, it's probably like a twig running against them or that type of thing. It's not going to be soft and fuzzy unless they were real low and got onto the belly. So if you're not finding them on porcupines, you know, I certainly haven't done any research or looked into why porcupines wouldn't have them, but that would be my thoughts on that.
I'd rather not inspect a porcupine.
What's that?
I'd rather not inspect one.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I'm not going to go looking for them either. But no.
You think a black bear would have ticks?
Black bears do, because I go out with Randy Cross.
Oh, do you?
And one of the things that I do when he's trapping is the guys from my office, we look for ticks.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
And we find dog ticks on them. So I found dog ticks on them directly. And we had a case last year that I have pictures of a denned up bear from LaGrange that was covered in winter ticks, which is the same one that gets on moose. So winter ticks will get on them, and dog ticks do. Deer ticks, I don't know. I haven't found any deer ticks yet, but I have personally found.
On bear,
black bear, yeah. Yep.
Before we run out of time, I just wanted to make sure listeners are aware of the fact your facility has been in business since this April.
April 1st, yeah.
And you're doing a land office business, because we have a real tick problem in Maine. And it's if you want to have a tick tested, you can do so.
Yep.
And what do? You put it in a little jar and bring it in? How does that work?
Yep. The easiest way to do is, we have a website, and it's ticks.umaine.edu. You go on there, and it explains exactly how to send in a tick to us, what to do, how to pay, everything else. And as I say, we only charge $15 to test a deer tick for three different organisms.
So $15 will get you a test of that tick. For three different diseases.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And next year we're going to start testing dog ticks for some diseases. And we're probably going to add, at some point, either next year or the year after, we're going to add the Powassan virus to it too.
Okay.
I have a quick question.
Yep.
Why is it that the doctors are so reluctant to test people for Lyme disease?
The reason is, the Lyme disease tests are not very effective on people, because what you're looking for in people are antigens that have been made to the spirochete that's in, or the bacteria, depending on which disease, that has been injected into the person through the bite. What we're looking for the DNA of the disease organism directly within the tick. So ours is like 99% accurate versus way less accuracy.
You're not going to tell me whether I have Lyme disease. You're
I am not going to tell you. Whether... I'm just going to tell you that tick you sent me, if it had that disease organism in it or not, then you then go back to your doctor and with that person discuss what, if anything, they want to do about it.
What would be the symptoms? If, for instance, you were bitten by a tick and didn't know it, how would you feel?
Well, Lyme disease is kind of like flu-like symptoms, like, you know, a lot of these diseases. So we always recommend to people that during the summer, if you get a flu-like symptom, go to your doctor, because there's other diseases associated with mosquitoes too. That's the same type of activity. And so, you know, in the body, aches and pains is another thing. Joint swelling and soreness is a big problem with Lyme disease. And with less than 50% of the people, you get a rash. And it may not be associated with the bite. So if you had a bite on your upper arm, the rash could be on your leg or your back or whatever. So
they kind of look for crotch areas, like elbows and under
well,
the arm.
They do like, the ticks like to go into protected places where it's warm and moist too. Just so that's why armpits and that type
they're
of thing.
Hard to find, yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
before we run out of time, you mentioned before the show, interestingly enough, that Senator Collins has sponsored A National Tick Act. What's right. that about?
Yep. It's $100 million over the next 5 years. She sponsored it with another senator from Minnesota and also Senator King here in the state of Maine. And it is for funding for research, management, and education. And, you know, who knows whether it will pass or not. But she held a congressional hearing in the lab on September 5th. So there was an actual U.S. congressional hearing right here in Maine in our lab.
Is science anywhere near developing a vaccine for Lyme disease?
They are working on a vaccine. There's a vaccine for animals. They don't have one for humans at the moment. We used to have one, but there were some problems with it, so they took it off the market. So they are working on a new vaccine, and my understanding is being tested now.
And I gather from all the anecdotal evidence I'm getting from friends and so forth that it's difficult, as Jim pointed out, difficult for doctors to diagnose for Lyme disease, right?
That is correct.
Very difficult.
Yep.
Yeah. So they right. they monitor symptoms, and that's about all they can
but,
do.
What they do, right. Yeah. And as I say, what we do has nothing to do with medicine at all. We're testing yep. the ticks.
Yep. But you suggest they get tested for it.
If the organism that if the tick that they sent us had one of those organisms in it, I would certainly be – we would send them right back to the doctor and say, you need to be talking to your doctor.
They usually give you azithromycin and prednisone.
Some doctors will. Some doctors yep. will say, let's wait for the symptoms, and it can take up to 6 weeks for the symptoms to occur. So yep.
Then it's too late.
Yeah, well –
Jim, we're out of time. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Hope you come back.
No problem. Anytime.
Okay. Thank All you. Right. Our guest next week is going to be blood tracker Susanna Hamilton and Lindsay Ware. And we'll see you all next week right here on
Maine Outdoors.